I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week. First up, Chad Finn, a sports media writer and general columnist for the Boston Globe. He is followed by Charlotte Carroll, who covers UConn basketball and the WNBA for The Athletic. In this podcast, Chad and I discuss the interest level in national broadcasts of baseball and where that is. Whether MLB expanding to streaming services such as Amazon and Apple Plus is good for the game. I do not think it is good for fans at all. Get a little into the Michael K. Alex Rodriguez megacast. And then conclude with a discussion of ESPN's re-signings of Adam Schefter and Adrian Wojnarowski. What that means for them, what that means for other on-air talents. And then an ending of whether we think Urban Meyer will be hired in sports broadcasting again. Both of us do not believe that will happen this year, but I think both of us have been long enough not to rule that out for next year for sure. As much as that would be, I think, a pretty brutal hire personally. Charlotte Carroll was on the ground covering the women's Final Four in Minneapolis. She discussed what that was like, the record number of media credentials that tournament received this year. What it means that the final drew 4.85 million viewers on all of ESPN's platforms. That's a monster number and one of the biggest the sport has ever seen. Certainly the biggest in, I think it was 12 years or something to that effect. And then we get into a little bit of what we both expect from UConn and South Carolina next year. I think both Charlotte and I agree that both teams will be back in the Final Four. And then a little bit on the status of Brittany Griner. Let me point out before we head to the podcast that we initially were going to release this episode a couple days ago, but put it off because we got Joe Davis, the new voice of the World Series for Fox. So Joe Davis heads first, and then we put this one out afterwards. So check out the archives if you missed the Davis one, you're interested. But without further ado, two great guests, Chad Finn and Charlotte Carroll on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, I bring on a regular guest to this podcast. That'd be Chad Finn. He is the sports media columnist as well as a general columnist for the Boston Globe. Chad, as always, thanks for joining me.
As always, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And as always, thank you for working as cheap as you do, Chad. All right, so let's start off. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, obviously, but to try to play with the calendar here, let's start with baseball. You know, we're taping this a day before opening day, depending on where you are. You either will get some rain or you won't get some rain. And so I want to start here, Chad. Man, there's a lot of national carriers covering baseball this year. You know, from our traditional, you know, Fox and ESPN and MLB Network. Yeah. Now you have Amazon, Apple Plus, Peacock coming around the pike. General question: what kind of interest do you expect with national broadcasts of baseball this year? Not regional, national.
Roughly the same, I guess, as last year. You know, if we had ended up losing games because of the lockout, which was a threat for a little while there, I think that would have been a significant drop off. But I think most fans have probably forgotten about that right now. And instead, their frustration is going to be, why can't I find this Red Sox or Yankees game on NESN or YES when it says here that it's, you know, on Peacock this morning? The frustration is going to be not being able to find games that they think are going to be available on their local carriers rather than being frustrated at the sport overall and disinterested.
Do you think, it's always an interesting sort of topic of conversation, like, do you think MLB is smart to try to spread the sport around as many outlets as they are, and this clearly they're doing the chat for money. You know, every one of these new outlets is new revenue for MLB versus centralizing it a little bit more, which I think you can't argue against. That's far more fan friendly than asking your fans to not only purchase cable, but to also purchase these streaming networks. I mean, I find it to be an incredibly unfan friendly way to do baseball, but they've made a decision like, we're going to just basically try to get as much revenue from as much different partners as we can.
Yeah, it's a money grab more than anything else, pretty much other than anything else. I don't see what the appeal is to the young demographics that they're supposedly trying to reach, that they always say that they want to get. It just doesn't feel like because the game is going to be on a streaming service that it's going to have any more appeal to the, you know, 21 to 29 year olds or anything like that. And it's, as I mentioned before, it's just going to serve to annoy fans who are used to tradition. I mean, baseball is a routine. You do the same thing almost every day. You turn on the TV at 6:30, watch a pregame show if you're into that, or first pitch at 7 o'clock every night. And it's probably the background noise to your evening. If you have a particular team that you really care about, nobody wants the frustration of trying to figure out day to day where the game is going to be broadcast. The broadcasters are probably, whether you like your hometown announcers or not, that's going to be another annoyance, that it's a different set of broadcasters. And there's really no way to look at it with any ounce of skepticism at all that you should have with this, that it's anything but a money grab, because the appeal of it really doesn't appeal to anybody who's other than who's making money off of it.
What's your expectation for places like Amazon and Apple Plus when it comes to how they're going to present the game?
Yeah, I have no idea. Do you? I mean, they're always touting new things and new angles on the broadcasts, or having somebody down on the field that's more communicative than a sideline reporter, or different levels of analytics that you can present. But I don't know what exactly that they have planned for that. And again, baseball fans, for better or worse, I mean, this isn't necessarily a great thing either, but they tend to be pretty set in their routine. I mean, you put the K-zone on there and they get ticked off, and that's a pretty unobtrusive thing for the most part. You move the score bug around and people are like, why is that in the left corner instead of the right corner now? It's just, that's probably the hardest sport there is to get people to change their habits. And if you try anything drastic, initially it's not going to go over well, and it's going to take a long time before it catches on.
Let's talk about sort of the mega cast options when it comes to baseball. You know, we've seen critical success when it comes to football with the Manning cast. Over this past weekend, Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi got some great reviews for their...
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was great.
For their, mega cast option. And again, both the Manning cast and the Bird and Taurasi show, we're talking their audience is 10x less than the main telecast. So you're really doing this a lot of ways for additive value for viewers, which is great. Very, very fan friendly versus like necessarily breaking the bank when it comes to viewers. So ESPN again, Chad, now once again sort of approaches this. They have Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez on a separate broadcast from the main broadcast, where they're going to try to sell you on a conversational broadcast with Kay and Rodriguez. They're going to sell you on, Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod Unplugged, basically. I'll sort of phrase it as, which in itself is kind of absurd, but
he's always plugged.
Yeah, right. Give it sort of the premise continuing. I don't know this to be the case, but maybe you might see, I think, more analytics on there. In theory, you could see more gambling stuff on there. ESPN hasn't announced this yet. There's a press conference actually today, in fact, the same day Chad and I are taping this. So, the canvas is open. They can do a lot of different things. I like this kind of thing, obviously, for viewer choice, but both of us cover this stuff. I am realistic. I think viewers would be surprised at how few people watch it relative to the main broadcast. And to me, I would predict the same with Kay and Rodriguez. I mean, if the main broadcast, we'll just play with these numbers for a second, right? If the main broadcast gets 1.5 million or 2 million viewers, right? Like I predict that Alex Rodriguez Kay broadcast gets 100 or 200,000 viewers tops. That would be that, you know, that's how I would look at it. You know, how do you see it?
That's really quite a lesser scale than what you get for the Monday night game too, where it's what, 10, 11, 12 million for the regular broadcast.
And then 1.5 million, 1.6 million for Manning's.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a couple of things here. First of all, I think this confirms Jimmy Pitaro is a huge Yankees fan, which we've always heard. Because my question in the conference call later today is going to be what's in this for Red Sox fans? Because
good question.
maybe Yankee fans.
Hate watching, I assume.
Yeah, maybe so. But the thing you have to have with this, Richard, and it's what Taurasi and Bird have, and certainly the brothers, the Manning brothers, is authenticity. You have to feel like you're listening in on something that you wouldn't be privy to normally. Like you're invited to this, this little party, a get together, people really entertaining, really funny, and know their stuff and know each other. And A-Rod's never been sincere. I don't know how it works that way with him, because he's never been the off the cuff funny guy or the one who reveals a little bit about himself in a humorous way without it feeling really scripted. So Kay's got a lot of heavy lifting to do here to get A-Rod to get out of corporate Shark Tank A-Rod mode and to be a light and funny and somebody that not only guests want to come on with and have a good time with, which was clearly the case on the Manning cast after a while. People really wanted to go on it because even though there was the quote unquote curse thing was going on, it was really fun and you knew you weren't going to be hit with hard questions. But the other thing was they just liked hanging out with those guys. And I don't know if that's ever been the case with A-Rod. So a lot of it's going to be on Kay to make this feel light and to loosen A-Rod up.
Yeah, so a couple things here, and I think everything he says is smart. One, Alex Rodriguez to me is a tough listen for 3 hours. I'd just be blunt. I think he's pretty good in the studio, personally, but or in a studio setup,
I do too.
I should
say the Fox version.
Yeah, but it's too much. Or let's put it this way: it was ESPN focusing on him too much that made that broadcast tough for me. It just everything was centered around A-Rod and his opinions and. It sort of became the A-Rod show.
Hey, we've got A-Rod here.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, you know, Jessica Mendoza essentially became an afterthought and all that stuff. So that's sort of part one. Then again, I think so much of this will be about like, well, how much are you putting on, you know, how much are you going to sort of center this around Alex Rodriguez? And by the way, I like Michael Kay, actually. I'm a Michael Kay supporter. I think he's a good broadcaster.
I'm not that familiar with him, to be honest.
There are people who I think find him polarizing, probably because you're always going to have a polarizing, you're always going to be a polarizing figure as the voice or the television voice of the Yankees. He also does a radio show in New York where he gives his opinions. But I like Michael Kay a lot. I got no problem sort of saying that. Part two, Chad, like I do think that because ESPN is ESPN and they're very good on booking and guys like Michael Kay and A-Rod have a pretty big Rolodex, I think they'll have no problem getting guests. You may not get the same level of guests that the Mannings do, but like, would it surprise you if like David Ortiz popped on that?
No, he does everything.
Yeah. Like that kind of thing. Like, you know, like I don't know.
Who's the baseball
Don
version?
Don Mattingly. I mean, Derek Jeter probably won't be on, but like I don't think they're going to have an issue with that. But I think it gets to what you're saying. Like when A-Rod is like just sort of like yapping with somebody or it's never going to feel as authentic to me because of who he is as it will be with Bird and Taurasi bringing LeBron on or the Mannings bringing like Russell Wilson on. That's just an A-Rod thing. It's given his history, given how he has sort of approached his life, like authenticity is not a word I would just identify with the guy.
No,
it's all sort of performative and programmed and scripted. So obviously one of the reasons he was a great player, but yeah, I'm with you. Kay's got a big lift there, man. I don't know if it might be too big a lift.
Well, you know what? We may hear this later today, but when you do a conference call with A-Rod, it feels like his talking points are all little
correct
snippets that he's thought over in his head already. Like, yeah.
Guy's trying to sell me on his cryptocurrency exchange. It's know what I mean? I don't want it.
Hey, I wouldn't bet against that sort of thing either.
Yeah, I just want, like, I would love A-Rod just come out and start cursing. Like, that would be, like, authentic and real. Like, it's just sort of F-bombing things.
Well, the beat guys always said how great he was to talk to about baseball when
Correct.
The cameras are off. Now, maybe that was part of his image you wanted to present, too. But, you know, you hear that enough and you think there's a real guy under there. But I guess you don't get to see it when the camera's on.
Yeah, I think he is a baseball nerd. Like, I think actually that's true. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I that comes off to me. It's just, it's everything else. And again, you know, I try to, not that I realize this might be like a controversial take to be fair to Alex Rodriguez, but like, it must fuck you up in some ways to be in the spotlight. Like, by the time you're 16, 17, 18, and everybody's sort of focused on everything you're doing, it's just an abnormal Truman Show world. So, like, in some ways, I get sort of how he is. But at the same time, there are also other people who have faced that and do not come off nearly as
LeBron.
Performative. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Even though he is to a degree too, but
to a degree, but, yeah. But I don't know. I feel like talking LeBron, I'm getting a real guy.
Yeah. He's actually great in like press conference situations when he's in the right mood.
In smaller settings.
Yeah.
I think when LeBron gets in trouble when he tries to sort of spin out of what his original sort of intent was, and then he becomes a little more PR wise. But I bet you if you just sat around with LeBron like somewhere, like a small dinner or something like that, he'd be phenomenal.
Yeah,
because I think he could sort of have a conversation with the guy. Now, one real baseball thing, as opposed to the media stuff of it, man. We both agree the AL East is going to be a monster. We're both in AL East cities. It should be an awesome race.
I think every Globe, our baseball preview came out yesterday. I think we all picked your beloved Blue Jays to win the AL.
Yeah, they're all everybody. The Blue Jays now they're the fancy team to pick for the New York Post and Daily News and Boston Heralds and Boston Globe is the world.
Yeah, you know, well,
they're the bell of the ball this year. I mean, they got a good team, but
they lost the AL Cy Young winner.
Yeah, like it's again,
Semien.
I think they have the most talent, but you know, you're still, and maybe it's sort of an inferiority complex. Like the Yankees are still the Yankees, and their ability to spend and their ability to get people. So I still keep my eye on them. And the Red Sox are tricky to figure out. It's like I feel like everything coming down with the Red Sox is coming, not surprising, coming down to the pitching staff.
They're better than you think always because
they've
got the math that you don't understand on their side. But
is that what they tell you? Yeah. By the way, who's Matt Barnes the closer, or am I getting someone else right now?
Hey, he's throwing 92 miles an hour, but that's the guy right now. But Garrett Whitlock's going to do all the heavy lifting.
I like Garrett Whitlock.
Yeah.
I got him on my fantasy team at a cheap price. Look at you. You're very already. Yeah, you're already like a Boston. You're like a Sox fan with the negativity chat, the sarcasm. I think they'll be better than you think. What do you think of Trevor Story? Good signing or bad signing?
Gives them leverage. Bogarts can opt out of his contract after this season, so they've got.
I know, and the best guy may be the guy they drafted this past year in the minors.
Yeah,
who everybody loves.
Yeah,
Marcelo Meyer. Am I right? Is that his name?
He's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys you can just tell.
He sort of has it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Red Sox are gonna be better than people think. I do think though, Sale is a big X factor here, depending on if he can come back in June. What he can give that team.
Yeah, he's had one healthy season in five. It's crazy. He said, you know, that's a guy who could have a TV future that nobody ever talks about if you wanted to do it. He is an unbelievably good quote. He won't talk about himself at all unless things are going badly. But if you ask him about, I don't know, the Jackie Bradley's defense or something, he can fill your notebook. And thoughtful guy, clearly loves the game, has opinions on stuff. I don't know if it's anything that he would want to ever do, but he would be really good at it if the time comes.
It's interesting. Yeah, usually the one thing with guys like that, the guys who make that kind of money, other than, you know, A-Rod is really the exception there. You know, if you got hundreds of million in the bank to sort of do baseball after the fact.
So why do you and I neither one of us bought the Tom Brady to TV stuff ever, right?
Exactly, right, yeah. And now he's back in Tampa. He's got his coach. He's ready to roll. All right, good segue here to football. You know, significant news in the sports media world. Adam Schefter and Adrian Wojnarowski signed their extensions, or their extensions were announced. I mean, I'd need to see them literally put the pen to paper on the contracts, but these things eventually get signed and done. You know, the one neither of those moves were surprising to me. I'd been working on that story for a while. terrible job. I put something out like literally 7 minutes before ESPN's press release.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. Magic how that works. Where do I sort of start with this? What's very clear, Chad, from all of this is the ESPN's philosophy, and I don't know if it's a quote-unquote Jimmy Pitaro philosophy. It's sort of just now an organizational philosophy. They want to have what they consider the biggest newsbreakers or best newsbreakers, that's a subjective thing, in the sport, in their major sports. They want these people to break news, and then they want to use that news to basically fuel their ecosystem when it comes to digital, social, all their shoulder programming, etc. So then you have to figure out, okay, what is the value of Adam Schefter in their most important property, the most important sport, the NFL, and what's the value of an Adrian Wojnarowski in one of their most important properties in the NBA. So that's the reason why you're seeing the crazy money that's going to these guys, you know, a little under $10 million sort of, you know, range for those guys. And so I'm not surprised at the re-signings, but it is, I will say, if you just sort of step back, in 2022, Chad, like had I told you in 2015 that two insiders at ESPN, former newspaper people, would be making like these kind of salaries, you would have told me I was insane. But that's the world ESPN now puts them in.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever have these reflective moments where they're like, I get $9 million to do this, or I guess in Woj's case is $7 million. One of the things that surprised me was the difference in salary there, because it Schefter has almost twice as many Twitter followers, which I didn't realize.
Andrew Marchand reported that of the Post, and you know, he's very well sourced in that world with salaries. Just so people, I mean, Chad and I sort of can give you the background on this. A lot of times when it comes to sort of, well, how do you, you know, you ask, how do you get salaries? Well, you can get them from agents, you can get them from competing agents, you can get them from the place that signed the people. Although a lot of times the place that signed the people will try to lowball that number because they don't necessarily want
the least likely.
They don't want the big number out there, because then other people, other talent at their place see that and be like, well, if Schefter's making this much, you know, I'd like this much. A lot of times competing networks may try to float you the money. And you know, a lot of it is a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle to try to figure out, you know, what it is. The best way, of course, is to go right to the source. I found that very few people will give you the salary. Although in my case, Chad, a couple of times, you'd be surprised. Some very, very famous people have told me what they make. And so I've always appreciated that. I'm not sure I'd be able to do that in reverse with them. So, you know, we'll use Marchand's numbers, and no reason to not believe it, that they're around that mark. And so, yeah, like that's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. You're worth what ESPN will pay you. And ESPN always has money to ultimately pay people what they want. But man, it's, I think the thing that's fascinating to me is, will that mean anything for other insiders? Like, does this mean anything for a Sham Sharnaya or an Ian Rappaport or a who's a big newsbreaker in MLB? Ken Rosenthal or John Morosi? Like, have these guys just gotten a raise because of this, or is this just an ESPN thing?
Well, the passing thing will be really interesting. I don't know offhand when his contract's up, but he's got a fracture.
He re-signed not too long ago, so he's
That's
done.
That's right. Yeah, he's. I mean,
yeah, and he's, and honestly, his number's not close to the Woj.
Well,
to the Woj Schefter.
It probably shouldn't be. I mean, he's got 20% of Woj's following, and Woj has 55% of Schefter's. I mean. Again, going back to our original conversation, it is.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say, no doubt ESPN considers their social media metrics important, and they have tried to monetize that. But like in sort of a meritocracy kind of landscape, like Jeff Passan, like breaks significant stories. I'd argue he's a better writer than both those guys by a lot.
Certainly, right?
So Schefter. Wojnarowski is a good writer. I would say Passan's, but it's all subjective. But in terms of the job, like he's as good at his job, right, as those two are.
He breaks more different kinds of news, I think, too.
Right, but so the different, like I'm agreeing with you here. So the difference in salary is one, how they measure social media might, and two, how they value
the sport,
the NFL, and basketball, right, more than baseball.
No, that's definitely true. I mean, that was my other conclusion when I saw those salary numbers was, well, you know, NFL wins again. I mean, because frankly, you know, Rich, if you you want to talk about what's most credible right now, it's more Woj than Schefter. I mean, as great as Schefter is at the job that they hire him to do, he's had a lot of embarrassments over the last couple of years.
Agreed.
Mr. Editor thing and some really dubious tape.
Deshaun Watson, his language and some of the tweets.
Dalvin Cook. Yeah. I mean, there's
Dalvin Cook was bad.
There's more than two strikes there. So, but you know, the other thing, I'm not sure if you mentioned it or not, but obviously the possibility that Vegas would hire these guys ratcheted up their value to ESPN.
Yeah. I mean, I think, honestly, I don't think it was nearly as close as maybe some have been reported in terms of like how close they were to going to any of these gambling places, but it was certainly out there.
Is it leverage? Is it enough to be leverage?
Yeah. I mean, yes. The reality is like those two guys are represented by CAA. CAA is not dumb. They sort of know how to get that into the marketplace. I do think Schefter was being honest. I think he told this to Peter King. Like, yeah, I mean, I think he feels that ESPN is a much better place for him to do what he wants in terms of the microphone, in terms of the security, in terms of having, you know, if you're the top NFL insider at ESPN, Chad, that job can't be duplicated, right? You have so much influence in the sport if that's what you want. And so, you know, then if ESPN is going to pay the money that they paid, it's an absolute no-brainer. But it really does tell you, I think one of the things that this tells you is just how important the NFL is to ESPN. And so if I was a talent at ESPN, I know people hate the word talent. If I was an on-air person in particular at ESPN, and I could sell or I could prove to management that I am really making them money or I am really of value for them to make money off me, I think Schefter just got you a race. I don't know if I could say that about Greg Wyshynski in hockey or if, you know, Emily Kaplan or some other sport, but I do think Schefter probably got some people in the NFL races. That's how
The NFL got Schefter a race too, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Just being associated with that league and having positioned himself to be the insider among insiders. I mean, I don't know if you look at it that way, but he's still the first one.
Yeah, I mean, access. I mean, ultimately, there's a lot of issues with people who have access, not just in sports, but in politics as well. But the reality is those people get paid.
Yep.
You know, like organizations can say that they're not comfortable or you know, with that line, but they certainly are comfortable with it. Like, it's just not, I mean, at the end of the day, ESPN had no problem with Schefter if they just are going to pay him close to $10 million, correct? Like, that's it. That's, at the end of the day, if you're getting paid that, they're fine with whatever transgressions happen and they'll live with it. And, you know,
I'd love to sit in on his conversations sometimes just when he's working his 19 phones and listening to how he swaps information with people, you know, because that's basically what he does.
Yeah, but he's very powerful, and he taught, you know, Peter King told me this a long time ago, man, like, you know, if you can provide things for your sources, that's how you ultimately get information. If you can tell your sources things they don't know, like, that's of immense value, and Adam Schefter is one of those guys that knows far more about other things going on in the league than the GM of the Browns, right, or the GM of the Patriots, and so he's got a lot of it's got a lot of leverage there. I also think he's a good reporter. I know he's been shit on lately, and I get it. But yeah, don't forget, like, the guy grinded like all back from his days from the
beat writer forever,
and elsewhere. And he was great at the NFL Network, and they screwed up royally by letting him go. So, you know, we're not talking about a total hack here. Again, every right to criticize the dude lately. I'm not defending him on that, but, like, you know, it's not black and white here. The shades of gray with the guy. Like, Schefter he's reported on some good stuff.
He's not sitting there waiting for people to call him, you know.
Yeah.
He's putting the legwork in.
And Wojnarowski, you know, again, that would tell me that they're all in on the NBA coming up, right? When the media rights deal's coming. You're not paying Adrian Wojnarowski $7-8 million if you're getting out of the NBA.
He's got that Woj bomb branding too. I mean, we talk about Schefter being the first guy you look for. Or whoever it is in baseball, Rosenthal, Passan, whoever. It's Ken for me, actually. But, you know, the something happens in the NBA, and you see the term Woj bomb in your Twitter feed really quickly.
He is far and away the most prominent NBA media person by a ton. That's just the reality of it. Obviously, I work with a guy who's a well-known insider in Shams, but I mean, the reality is, like, there's that guy is sort of at the top of the chain, and you know, and will be until otherwise. And you know, now being locked in ESPN, it just, you know, you're going to see him on their most prominent NBA forums and et cetera. So I don't expect that to change.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I floated this idea in a column on The Athletic on Tuesday chat that I thought after next year's Final Four, which is in Houston, which is a place very, very near to Jim Nance's heart, I thought it would be a good move for CBS to make the switch on their Final Four, and title game coverage, make the switch to Ian Eagle or Kevin Harlan, who are, just to be honest, better basketball broadcasters than Nance. Now, I wasn't trying to retire Nance because I think Nance would still, if he wants to do it, he'd be awesome on one of the other teams leading up to the Elite Eight. I think you'd actually strengthen your bench significantly because Nance will always give you a good broadcast. He'll never give you a bad broadcast. But to me, like, I feel like 2024, be great to see either Ian Eagle or Kevin Harlan in that number one chair. They're just there. How they broadcast basketball, like, to me, is sort of how basketball should be done. They just have a better feel for the sport than maybe any other broadcasters alive outside of Mike Breen.
You're a Gus Johnson guy? Yeah.
I am. I like Gus a lot. Yeah, I thought he was great. Perfect kind of feel for the NCAA
early round upset guy, right? Eagle's actually awesome. Great at that, too. The St. Peter stuff and calling, exactly. You know, calling games you don't expect. Yeah, I agree with you there. I'm curious if they do it.
I don't expect them to.
I don't either. But one of the mysteries from covering media that has kind of lingered around the last few years is wondering whether Eagle gets the recognition that he deserves. I mean, I love Harlan. I think Harlan's great. I love the Monday night broadcasts on Westwood One. Is that what they still call it? Westwood One with Kurt Warner.
Westwood
He's got probably the best sense of humor of any play-by-play guy. But I don't know if the NCAA looks at him and says, this is the guy we want calling our broadcast. Just because he's got a little bit, too much energy, a little bit of edge to him. I don't know what it is. A little goofiness sometimes. I don't know. Eagle, on the other hand, I think has probably the perfect combination for what the NCAA looks for, if they ever look for, and CBS, if they do look for a successor to Nance. But Nance is just he's been associated with this since the Duke UNLV in what, 91?
Going back 30 years at this point. More than 30 years. I mean, again, this is not to shit on Nance. He'll always give you a professional broadcast. But I think CBS has better basketball broadcasters. I'm also, here's the other one before we sort of finish up on our final topics. Why are networks so wedded, Chad, to the idea that the number one team must always sort of only do like X games? Like, there's also no reason. I mean, I know they're not going to do it. Like, why couldn't you have the Nance crew do one semi and like the Eagle crew do one semi?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why? And maybe CBS's answer would be, well, you know, we want the same team doing each of the different games because they might have to do the Monday night game. We want them in production meetings. Are you telling me the NCAA is not going to allow two teams in a production meeting? I mean, give me a break. You're paying these guys $500 million for the access. So, I don't know. A lot of times, like, teams, networks get wedded to this. I also don't – to me, there'd be no reason why CBS couldn't give Eagle and Charles Davis and Evan Washburn, like, the number one game 1 week and give Nance and Romo the number two game.
I don't know. Maybe part of it's probably salary. Part of it is that they like being able to shine that spotlight and on their quote unquote number one team. And, you know, you look at the buzz and the attention that these broadcast teams are getting in general, but particularly with the NFL right now, with the money, the Joe Bucks of the world and Al Michaels and Troy Aikman and them are making, they probably feel more pressure than ever to have a quote unquote star in that role. I'm going to give Fox a lot of credit if, you know, Kevin Burkhardt ends up with the roles that we think he's going to get across football in the NFL, across football and baseball, because that's a guy who's worked his way up and probably didn't have that number one announcer pedigree among, you know, a lot of the people that worked in Fox Sports management when he first started out. So I tend to root for guys like that, that climbed up the ladder and proved over and over and over again that they were really good at this. But we'll see if he has the cachet and the appeal in that role that they seem to want with these superstar high salary broadcasters now.
Yeah, and Burkhardt's he's getting that you know, Fox top job.
I mean, World Series,
even if they haven't formally announced it. The interesting thing about Fox right now is that they have made a specific decision not to anoint Greg Olson as the number one analyst following Aikman. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, and I would tend to say, if you asked me today, as I'm taping this on April 6th, that would be my prediction when all is said and done.
That they end up with him?
It's a very easy decision at the end of the day. If you believe Greg Olson is a long-term number one broadcaster, like, promote the guy. Like, it's not a hard decision. If you don't, then what you're telling the market, I think now, is that you don't think he's a long-term number one, and this is why you're trying to find anyone else to work with Burkhardt. Fox's problem right now is there's no surefire person they can bring in. You know, there's no, like, sort of prospect that just retired from the field that you think can walk into the booth and be can't miss. There's no
Peyton Maybe they can trade for Drew Brees.
Obviously. Well, the interesting thing about Brees is had he come out this year, though, had he retired this year, he would be working with
Burkhardt. No doubt.
Do you agree? That's
Absolutely
who Fox
no doubt.
Would have hired. Unquestionably. NFC guy, great relationships with Fox. It would have been Burkhardt and Drew Brees, for sure. But obviously, Brees now with NBC. They did kick the tires on Brady, like everybody else did. And, you know, I'm sure they're looking around. But there's not, again, like, there's not someone out there who, like, you can bring in who I think just has that combination of potential and sizzle. A couple of years ago, you know how much talk was about Philip Rivers maybe doing this, and he eventually went to coach high school. But I'm not even sure Philip Rivers is, like, some guy comes into the booth and he's can't miss.
He's a great guy to talk to, but he's not critical. Even as the Chargers quarterback, he wasn't really critical of other people, so...
So I don't know. I don't know who's out there, man. I mean, go back like 6 or 7 years ago when everybody thought Rex Ryan was going to be the next Madden. It doesn't always work out. Like, you don't always know. But this is a strange one on Fox because, like, they haven't made a decision. They certainly, I can tell you for sure, like, the people who are, you know, who are waiting for this decision haven't been told yet. And so it's interesting. You know, we're into April. You got time, obviously, but I don't know. If you're Greg Olson, I mean, on the one hand, you're obviously psyched that you're, you know, you've been on the number two team and Fox definitely likes you.
Good reviews.
Burkhardt, but you also on the back. Yeah, good reviews. You also back your mind. You got to be thinking, man, like, they just promoted my partner and I'm sitting out here on the island.
That's what you get for being an ex-tight end rather than being an ex-quarterback.
You know what? I think, weirdly enough, subconsciously, there's probably something to that. And again, to me, like, I think Greg Olson can do the job. I'm not on the Olson train. Like, you know, this is the next Romo or next Collinsworth, but I think he's good in the booth, and I think he can continue to grow and get better. So I'm still going to predict, when all is said and done in September, it's Burkhardt and Olson week one. But if that changes, I also wouldn't be surprised as well. All right, last one, Chad. I feel like I've asked you this before, but I got to ask you again anyway. You see Urban Meyer getting a TV job this year?
I feel like we did talk about this. Maybe in the context of Gruden.
Maybe.
This year, huh? Well, that's my stance.
You think Gruden? That's a more interesting one. You think Gruden's ever coming
untouchable.
Back to TV?
And wasn't that good anyway.
And he's suing the NFL
anyway.
Well,
that doesn't help either, yeah. Yeah, that's the, I mean.
And what about Urban?
This year. I mean, that's the question. He comes back. It's just a matter of whether... you know, he takes a year away to let some of this fade. Or
I don't think Fox, which would be the one place where he'd come back to, I don't think they take him this year. But if you're asking
not
me
even
in 2023,
Fox,
I yes, not even. I put it at 50-50 in 2023.
Yeah, that Fox. Sounds about right. I think he's back. I'll give you.
You buy that?
Year hiatus. Yeah.
Both of us have covered this long enough to know that, like, while you want networks and outlets many times to use the character of a person as perhaps like an indicator not to hire someone if their character is garbage, but both of us know that's just not the case. Like, it is rarely the case. Like, yeah, they like Fox probably wouldn't hire O.J. Simpson. Like, I feel confident to say that. But honestly, I'm not 100% confident. I'm like 99% confident. Do you know what I mean? And then Urban is obviously lower on the scale than OJ. So I just like, if a network or an outlet believes that they can ultimately use you to forward their product or monetize you, they'll bring you back and they'll live with the fallout. So I don't know. I would put it at 50-50 Urban's back in 1 year. If this is
I'll go 51.
And I would assume he does. Yeah, I don't think he has many options. I'm not sure he's
can always go to his club. So. Is he selling that? He's selling his
the bar that he has, you mean?
His layover when he is like supposed old, to go like back Mickey to Mantle. Jacksonville.
Yeah. If I read ever again about Urban Meyer values.
Well, that's
family,
the thing, though. I mean, you mentioned character. I don't expect him to judge character for use that as a basis for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about character like if you have infidelity. Like, you may be against infidelity, but I don't necessarily think that should be a restrict you from getting hired by, my God, getting hired by a television network. But it's the other stuff. I mean, it's all the other stuff that has surrounded Urban Meyer that's really, you know,
phony.
Phony, but just even from how he handled Zach Smith at Ohio State. To everything you learned about his tenure with the Jaguars and just how he treats people and players. I mean, the guy just comes off like just a total jerk. And I don't know why you'd want that dude to be part of your television family, but networks have surprised us.
Yeah, we talk about insincerity with A-Rod. He's not even at Urban Meyer's level at that. You know, nothing authentic about him.
Well said. All right, Chad, anything else before I let you go? I mean, you've given me so much of your time and charged exactly $0.
Don't give the Globe any ideas. Just, working on baseball preview media stuff this week. And we have a book coming out that I'm working on all the Globe's content, Red Sox coverage through the years. So that'll be out in about a year. But it's taking up a lot of time right now.
All right, good luck on that. We'll look to that. Chad Finn is a sports media writer and general columnist for the Boston Globe, frequent guest on this podcast. Chad, thank you very much for joining us today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Rich.
All right, as I said at the top, we now bring in Charlotte Carroll, who covers UConn basketball and the WNBA for The Athletic, fresh off the Women's Final Four in Minneapolis. Charlotte, welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. You get any sleep?
I got up on a little. I think I'm maybe a functioning human at this point. We'll see. Right. But thanks
always
for having me
to be
on.
Always important to be a functional human. All right. So very open-ended question here. How would you evaluate being on the ground, the coverage of the Women's Final Four? And when I say evaluate, meaning like your thoughts on just how many outlets and people were there, the kind of coverage that you saw locally. I'm curious to get your insight.
Yeah, no. So this was actually my first Final Four, men's or women's. So I didn't really have a point to base it off of or evaluate it, kind of compare to. But just from getting on the ground to the entire weekend there, it was awesome. I mean, I was on a plane full of UConn media members. You get to the airport, there's all these welcome banners and you're there. And then the actual event, you kind of all were crammed in a media room and it was packed. Each press conference, there was hardly a chair to be found. People were sitting on the ground. So that was really encouraging just to see how many people were there and kind of also maybe more than expected to the fact that they didn't have enough seating for everyone. In terms of coverage, I was reading actually Lindsay Gibbs's Power Plays newsletter and she said, I think there was 600 media credentials issued. which was the most I think ever or in a very long time. But there were tons of national outlets there. We were seated by Iowa City, the next day, the Washington Post. USA Today was just down the line from me. New York Times was there. ESPN were there. In addition to just local writers from the Star Tribune doing the local angle and getting all that coverage. So it was really exciting to see.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the local coverage, because that's always a pretty good indicator. I will say that Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal said that there were roughly 1,000 media members credentialed in Minneapolis, so up from the high of the 700s a couple of years ago. So obviously the credential number was up. How did you find the local coverage? Because a lot of times, I haven't covered the event in, I think it's 3 years, but, you know, as I told you before we came on the air, I did cover for Sports Illustrated for like 14 or 15 years in total. And one of the things that was always interesting to me was how much the local outlets invested in the tournament. And I remember when I first started, the investment was not very good. But as my tenure there continued, I did see local places start doing more stuff. Newspaper outlets would send more reporters. Eventually, we got even to like some, 10, 12 page previews. It's the way it should be. So how was it in Minneapolis with the Star Tribune and then the local television places?
Yeah, no, there was a ton of different outlets there, and the Tribune was there. Star Tribune was there writing stories. I think it helped that they had Paige Becker's huge local storyline, hometown kid comes back. So that was extra incentive as it was to cover this and to kind of get into this. But I was impressed. I kept seeing some stories of those being shared and different things. So that was exciting to see.
What kind of access was afforded to the media members who were there?
So access-wise, that would be, I guess, one complaint I have. And hopefully this is the last of the COVID tournament years and things improve for next year. So what it looked like, I guess I can kind of run through the day before the Final Four, or the day before, excuse me, the national championship game. You had open practices with each team where you could watch and kind of see what was happening. Then each team also had a press conference. So the coach would speak at the days. And during that time, the players were in what they called breakout rooms, which was just kind of this line of kind of separated by curtains, and you could pick and choose which player you wanted to talk to. So that was great, at least that there was some in-person access with the players compared to the previous, the day before the Final Four games where they were up on the podium. But it was difficult because you kind of had to make a decision of, do I want to talk to the players? Do I want to go sit in the coaches' press conference? And then there was still that, it was difficult to kind of get that one-on-one connection, because even though the players were separated, there were enough media members where you never got really any one-on-one time with any of the players, which is a good thing, I guess, in coverage of the sport. But it's tough to get those details that really make or break a story. So it was kind of up to you if you could reach out to the school's SID and get some one-on-one time. But it wasn't like the open locker room that you're able to do in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things sort of that, I had to make those same decisions that you had to make. And a lot of times for the coach's press conference, you'd sort of bail on that because you'd hope there'd be a transcript of that. And even though you might not ask your question, you're at least getting the transcription there. What I always found, which is what I loved about the women's tournament, was you would go and there would be significant amount of people in a press room for like Breanna Stewart or Asia Wilson, whatever the stars of the sport were, there might be 30, 40, maybe now because there's more credentialed, maybe that's like 50 or 60 in the breakout room. But if you would go to, let's say, like the third star on whatever the Final Four team would be, you could sit in the front row and you might not have a one-on-one, but you could have a one-on-three.
Yeah.
And you eventually sort of stick around and the player sort of would realize that you're interested in their story. You really could get a good feature, because a lot of times you might be in there and it might be some TV reporter who's just looking for like a quick soundbite. And so that was one thing I loved about that tournament, was that the equivalent of it for the men, like you're never getting like the number three player on Gonzaga or North Carolina, like that kind of access. But in the women's game, you could establish something with one of those players. But I'm with you. That was not necessarily the case for the biggest, like Paige Beckers, I'm sure, when she did her breakout session, the I bet you it was 100 people in that room would be my guess.
I didn't even try, just because, yeah, exactly. Because of, they also actually did transcripts, ended up doing them for the players too, which was interesting. But yeah, I didn't bother with Paige. I didn't bother with AZ. I kind of went back and forth with Olivia Nelson-Dota, with Leah Edwards, and Kristen Williams. So able to get a little bit with them, which was exciting and fun.
Yeah, Leah Edwards, Canada pride there. We'll see if she eventually leads that team down the road. How many people were there for The Athletic?
We had three focusing full-time, and then Nicole, it was me, Chantel Jennings, Shannon Ryan, and then also Nicole Auberbach was there. She was doing radio stuff with Sirius, but also pitched in and wrote this awesome story on Destiny Henderson after the title win. So obviously,
how does it work? So I think readers would be interested in this, or readers, I think listeners would be interested in this. How does it work in terms of how is it decided who does what? You're the Athletic's UConn writer. So I would makes logical assumption that you're doing everything UConn for as long as they're there. But other than that, how did it work?
Yeah, no, I mean, I got very lucky that UConn made it this far and I could focus on that. But then we kind of split it up based on what was happening. So with UConn and South Carolina in the title game, I was going to write the UConn win story no matter what, if they had won. And then Chantel was writing the big South Carolina story. And then I was able to actually use some of the reporting that I did in my UConn story to kind of just frame it and change it with the UConn loss. And then Shannon and Nicole were kind of there to see what else kind of happened and just see what happened in the game. So like Destiny went off, had a career high game. So it was like, okay, we need to focus on her. And Nicole was able to pitch in and write a story on that. And then Shannon was able to respond to what Dawn was saying in her press conference about being only the second or the only head coach to win, or only one Black head coach to win two national titles. So Shannon was able to focus on that, thankfully. And it was great.
What did the players say about the issue of gender equity in terms of like the facilities that they had, the NCAA's attempts to sort of to make things equal versus the men? You know, Sedona. What I was about to say, Sedona Prince.
Yes.
Sedona Prince really embarrassed them into making these massive changes. Like the I hate to be a cynic, but I don't think the NCAA honestly would have done anything unless, if not for the fact that this well-known player from the University of Oregon like embarrassed them in the multiple millions of views from her video the year before. So what were the players, if they were saying anything about just, you know, did they feel that things were more equal this year? Did they feel that the NCAA was making true and honest changes? How did you see it from your end?
Yeah, I didn't hear a lot of those questions just because of what I was focused on, but it sounded like they were, I don't want to say happy, but they could kind of see some changes and just maybe more of the perception and the way they were getting treated seemed to be better. Like the little things I think were a little bit equaler, and they did seem to have a good time at the tournament, but I think it's just a matter of, is this kept up and versus like, is this just a one-time deal? Like, is this something they're going to commit to years down the line and going forward and keep making bigger institutional changes rather than just showing this one season, like, hey, we responded, we were called out for this last year, we're going to make it look good this year versus the upcoming seasons.
What did you make when the numbers came out this week that the South Carolina UConn final drew 4.85 million viewers on ESPN, you know, most watched game in many, many years. The game itself peaked over 5 million. That's a massive number for the sport. Way up over last year, way up over 2020. And this was done on ESPN. Game's not even on ABC. You can only imagine what the game might have done on a network. But regardless, it's great news for the sport. But more than that, it's yet again another blaring light at the massive interest in this sport, particularly this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. You see the growing interest every day. I feel like every time ESPN PR releases viewership numbers, it's a record number. So it's kind of just like, okay, this was expected and it should be the normal and it should be on ABC. there's no reason for it not to be with numbers like this. It's like, okay, we got to put it on network television. It's so everyone can watch this product. It's awesome. And the basketball is always great. And especially, I mean, UConn is going to draw those numbers and South Carolina is going to draw those numbers. And the idea of UConn and South Carolina, we've had really great games between them the last two seasons. If you had the Bahamas matchup, then the intrigue of their rematch being canceled mid-season. Last year, you had that Paige making that crazy overtime shot or crazy end of thriller kind of a shot. So the games have been awesome and the players have awesome stories and definitely should go ABC.
All right. Good segue there, Charlotte, to talk about what to expect next year from South Carolina and UConn. From my perspective, I expect these two teams to be back in the Final Four. We actually, if you had asked me today, I would make this rematch the odds-on favorite next year. Aaliyah Boston is back for South Carolina. Zaya Cook is back. They have, you know, as I'm sort of looking at their roster here, essentially every player of consequence back except Destiny Henderson. They have good recruits coming back in. On the UConn side, obviously Paige is back. AZ Fudd is back. Aaliyah Edwards is back. And they have a really good recruiting group coming in, including some size, which is what they really could use. You know, you cover this on a day-to-day basis much more than me. But if you ask me right now, this would be my one and two teams in the preseason. How do you see
it? No, I'm right there with you. I think UConn's for sure going to be back. And I think next year might be the team that could win it all. Obviously, this team kind of looked like it too. And just with the way that Destiny kind of like played out and in Minneapolis and hometown, it just really felt like it was going to be a team that won a championship, but they just didn't have enough to like push them over the edge. Whereas next year, I think they're going to be really prepared. And I mean, Gene Auriemma was talking about this, like, as long as everyone stays healthy, he likes their chances. And assuming they don't have a year, a season like they did last year or this past year, things look really good. I mean, you're going to have all this experience. Six of the nine players that played on Sunday were freshmen or sophomores. So they're only going to grow from this experience. You're going to have Paige, who's going to be on a mission after losing in hometown Minneapolis. AZ was sick on Sunday. So you can only imagine how she would have played if she was feeling healthier. And they're just going to kind of grow from this. I mean, you saw glimpses of Caroline Ducharme and Amara DeBerry that Gino put in, and both played. I mean, Amari only played a few minutes. Caroline played well, all things considered. So I'm excited to see where they go.
Yeah, it's good for the sport too. I actually think rivalries are great for the sport. I think it's really great that South Carolina has emerged to where they are. Again, I used to cover this and read, I got a headache thinking about this, Charlotte. So many stupid columns on how UConn was bad for the game, et cetera. Usually from people who just parachuted in and never covered women's basketball. Had you talked to any women's basketball coach, they would have told you the exact opposite. And they said, UConn is making our program better because we have to invest more. We have to recruit better. We can tell our athletic directors and our institutions, like, look, if you want us to compete with these guys, you got to put more resources to us. And look, lo and behold, look what happened. UConn hasn't won in 5 years. South Carolina is essentially where UConn is, was 5 years ago. So it's been great for the sport, and that would be my expectation that those two teams will be back. All right, last one for you. Again, you cover the WNBA, and I wonder from we're not so far from the season starting. Who would you say are at the moment the favorites for the title?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I can't believe WNBA draft is next week.
It's coming up.
Crazy how quick it turns around.
Yeah, next year's draft, though. Watch out for that one.
I don't know. I would say, I mean, Seattle's always a favorite, especially bringing
Vegas.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Vegas numbers are. I'd have to look that up. But they're up there with Sue Bird coming back for one more year and Stewie. I mean, Sky coming back and returning faves. You got to kind of give it to them, Chicago Sky. I would have said
that was a good
Phoenix
start.
Mercury too, but that I think you with EG and the Russia situation, it plays a little bit into it. I don't know how that's affecting maybe Vegas numbers or anything, but that's a big loss just from a basketball perspective, let alone.
We'll finish up on this. You know, one of the things I had TJ Quinn on not too long ago, and we talked about covering the Griner story and the complexities of it and how it's very tricky, obviously, for the State Department as well as reporters in that, you know, you want people to know what is happening, but in many ways, you don't want to give the Russians the leverage of the story being so big in the United States. But the reality is, as we get close, you know, first of all, obviously we all hope that they get her out of there. But if she's still in Russia as the WNBA season is about to start, you do wonder what the league and what the players sort of are talking about, have been told, and how they're going to approach this story. Because, like, people are going to pay attention to the start of the WNBA season if Brittany Griner isn't back home. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's almost inevitable that that story is not going to get an additional, you know, sort of an additional press run.
Yeah, it was actually, it's interesting you say that, because I was able, USA Basketball had some practices and media availability over the Final Four weekend. So I hopped over to one of those, and tons of questions about BG and just kind of the situation there. And all were kind of, I mean, they managed to just kind of say, like, and rightfully so, hope she's okay. Hope BG's fine. And that was kind of the focus, at least in this practice, but a lot of questions about that situation and kind of what the response is. So as you said, you can only imagine it'll increase, unfortunately. And you just hope that BG is okay and everything's going to work out fine.
Yeah, it's an awful story. You know, one of the many awful stories that's come out of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But yeah, I think often about when I think about women's basketball, and, you know, obviously the great things that happened when it came to this tournament and stuff. But many times it's hard not to think of her, because this sort of story exists as a counterpart to all the amazing things that are happening on the court now. Charlotte, I hope you keep covering the Women's Final Four. I could tell you from experience, it's such an awesome event to cover. It's so much fun.
No, I had a blast, and I was really grateful to be able to experience it after two COVID seasons, I guess three almost at this point.
Right. Dallas next year, right?
Warm weather.
Yeah, Dallas next year. Where is it in 2024? Do you know?
I think Columbus, if I'm remembering correctly.
Back to cold weather.
But yeah. Minneapolis did a great job. It was a really fun event, regardless of the snow.
Charlotte, you can be honest. Let's hold that thing in Honolulu. Or like
I am a Midwest born and bred kid, so like
that's true. Right?
I'm used to it. But
you're an Illinois grad, yes, I think. Right, I remember. Yeah. Okay. That's true.
From Chicago. You're all Midwest, but I'm all for Hawaii if they want to put it there.
Yeah. Yeah. We might be waiting for that one. Charlotte Carroll covers UConn basketball and the WNBA for The Athletic. You can check her out on Twitter, obviously, and she just came back from doing some great work in Minneapolis with our fellow colleagues, Shannon Ryan, Nicole Arbach, and Chantel Jennings, all of them who covered the Women's Final Four. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast, and I'll check back with you come WNBA season.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Chad Finn and Charlotte Carroll for their time and their insights. If you like these kind of conversations, head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch page on Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That stuff does have meaning, significant meaning, actually, for me. So if you like this podcast and want it to continue, please do that. It helps a lot. Previous podcast guests recently, Jim Miller did a little more on ESPN's mega contracts for on-air people. Grant Wall on the coverage of the upcoming World Cup in Qatar. For that, Paul Heyman on being part of WrestleMania 38. For that, covering war, watching post Isabella Krasudian. She is in Odessa, Ukraine right now. We talked to her from there. And she's a former sports writer for the Post to cover the Capitals. And just an absolutely remarkable reporting journey that she's been on. Then go through the list. Taylor Rooks of Bleacher Report, Rebecca Lobo and Holly Rowe of ESPN. TJ Quinn, who I referenced in this podcast, was a guest. Brian Curtis, Mike Tirico, Michelle Tafoya, Troy Aikman, Mike Golding, Jay Glazer. Those are like the last 10 or so. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his support and hard work. I want to thank everybody at Canes 13, and thank you, mostly, of course, for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.